RV Family Travel Atlas is sponsored by Jayco. Since 1968, Jayco has been providing a way for generations of families to create lasting memories. For more information, visit your local Jayco dealer or head on over to jayco.com.
And by the Thetford Corporation, the industry expert and innovation leader, Thetford has made RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. To see a complete lineup of products, visit thetford.com.
And by Cabela's. Cabela's has everything you need to get your family into the great outdoors. Visit Cabela's.com and make sure your next camping trip is one for the record books.
And by Campgrounds of America. To find out what's behind the yellow sign, visit KOA.com or download the free KOA app today.
And by Outdoorsy. The largest and most trusted rental marketplace, Outdoorsy is making it safe and easy to make money renting your RV with full insurance, roadside assistance, secure payments, and real people ratings and reviews. Visit Outdoorsy.co to find a cool RV to rent or see how much money you can earn renting your RV today.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we write about RV and family travel with our three boys, Theo, Max, and Wes.
You can read about our adventures at RVFamilyTravelAtlas.com, and you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
On this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas, we are bringing you the next travel episode from our epic Pacific Northwest adventure. We spent almost a month touring Washington, Oregon, and Northern California, and can't wait to share all the highlights and recommendations from our trip.
This week, we are talking about the majestic redwoods, where we spent time hiking amongst the giants on the Northern California coast. We have had hugging a redwood tree on our bucket list for many decades, and we finally checked that one off the list.
You might think you've seen some pretty tall trees in your lifetime, but we know that these old-growth sanctuaries will stun you into silence. You are listening to episode number 155, Greetings from Redwood National and State Parks.
Before we head into this week's featured topic, greetings from Redwood National and State Parks, it's time for our RV News Minute, which is sponsored by Jayco.
Jayco's Melbourne Class C motorhome is top-line comfort, backed by rock-solid durability and an industry-leading two-year limited warranty. Built on a Mercedes 3500 chassis and powered by 188 horsepower V6 turbo diesel engine, the Melbourne will keep you going. Visit your local Jayco dealer or jayco.com for more information. Jayco, generations of family fun.
Okay, for this week's RV News Minute, we wanted to kind of draw your attention to a really awesome conference that's going to be happening in October. And we've had podcast listeners go to this, and they did nothing but rave about it. So it might only be a handful of you out there that might want to go, but we really wanted to share the information. So Walter Cannon, who's a friend of the show and has been on the show, though it's been too long since he's been on, is the president of the RVSEF, which is the RV Safety and Education Foundation. Now, every year they do a big conference called the Technical Education and Safety Conference. All right, so this year it's October 1st to 5th. It's in Elizabethtown, Kentucky. Right now it's $249 for admission, and it is basically several days jam-packed, filled with seminars and classes about the RV lifestyle, about a lot of technical stuff and safety stuff. But this is not intended for experts, right? I mean, the experts are the ones that are there teaching these classes and running these seminars, and it really is for the general RV owner and user so that they can become better equipped to take care of their own RVs, to maintain their own RVs, and to be safe in their RVs. And frankly, I really want to go to this because I would like to get better at the technical side. We all need to be as safe as we possibly can be. So this is a terrific and affordable seminar that you could go to learn a lot more about the RV lifestyle.
And, Walter Cannon has been really working in the industry for decades. So what he does is he brings other experts together from the industry, the know-it-alls, really.
Well, and these people are almost famous within the RV industry, mm-hmm. like Gary Bunzer. I mean, this is A-plus talent teaching you these courses, absolutely.
Yeah, so if you have that flexibility in your schedule, I would definitely point the RV in the direction of Kentucky.
Casita Dean went last year, and he loved it.
Yeah, he did a full review on our forum about it and said that it was fantastic, and he learned so much. So we could get you there, but you'd rather go camping whenever given the opportunity.
That's honestly the problem.
It's a good travel time for us.
it's not only that, but school's back in session, and this does run during the school week. So I might take another look at it and see if I can go, but I will get there at some point. And I'm jealous of any of you who get to go.
All right. So this episode is all about our fourth stop on our Pacific Northwest adventure, which was in Northern California in the Redwoods, right? National and state parks. So this is another one of our paired episodes. And to get the full story behind our stay, you are going to have to head over to Campground of the Week, where we review the Redwoods KOA.
The Crescent City Redwoods KOA.
They always like to make it a little difficult to remember the city.
The Crescent City Redwoods KOA holiday.
Yeah. So you have to go over to Campground of the Week and listen to that review, because that is where we stayed during this stop. And we'll talk about what we did on this show, and then you'll go over there and you'll listen to the campground review.
And a teaser, you really want to go over and listen to that episode, because the majority of that property is a Redwoods forest, the Redwoods KOA. Like 10 of their 17 acres is an actual Redwoods forest. So it's actually part of the Redwoods to some degree. It's not part of the state or national park, but there's a real strong link between the campground and our trip to the Redwoods.
All right. So we are going to be back in a minute and dive into our Redwoods content. We are going to talk about Jeremy's favorite topic, some media and books that will help you learn more about the Redwoods.
A little nerdy background on the Redwoods, just to get you to appreciate it.
All right,
stay tuned.
Get ready to get educated. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's time for our featured topic, greetings from Redwood National and State Parks. But first, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Campgrounds of America.
It may be hard to imagine, but we reminded you last week and we're going to remind you again this week. Now is the time to be booking your fall getaways. And we really want to emphasize that time can be tough, tight in the fall, because kids are back to sports, you know, school, all of those different family activities are like being scheduled around and everything. So one way that it makes it really easy to do a quick weekend trip is to try a cabin at the campground. This year, we really focused on doing some content around alternate accommodations, right? So in other words, ways that you can, you know, enjoy the campground experience without necessarily having your RV, because there might be a variety of different reasons why it would take you more time or be more difficult
if you keep your RV in storage.
Exactly.
You know who you are.
Yeah.
You know, if it's tough to get the RV out for the weekend for whatever reasons, you know who you are.
Right.
And the cabin allows you to get that campground experience.
We stayed in a cabin at the Redwoods, the Crescent City Redwoods KOA. We stayed in one of their deluxe cabins there. And we will never choose a hotel over a campground when given the choice as a family. It was so nice for the boys to still have all of the campground stuff, and we were able to stay in a cabin. So,
frankly, for us, hotels aren't really options that we look at. I'm not excited to look at a hotel.
No.
But now that we've kind of discovered we can stay at campgrounds even if we don't have the RV for whatever reason. And I think for the last thing that we might do this year in terms of this thematic year of exploring alternate accommodations, we're trying to schedule a romantic getaway weekend in a KOA cabin.
Wrap up that theme.
So
all right.
Stay tuned.
So find out what's behind the yellow sign and visit KOA.com or download the free KOA app today. All right.
Today.
Today.
Okay.
Today.
And maybe you want to start planning your trip to Redwood National and State Parks today, because, you know, as we were putting up photos on social media, so many people said, that's on my bucket list. I have wanted to go there for years. And maybe just geographically, because of where it is, all the way at the top of Northern California, it's one of those places that people dream about going to but don't quite get there because it is.
Yeah, because if you go to any of the major places in California, like LA or San Francisco, this is still a distance from there.
Yeah, it's 6 hours from San Francisco, at least, from what I understand. All right, so let's start by sort of breaking down down this whole, like, what is Redwood National and State Parks? Because it's a very unique, it's run and organized in a very unique way. I've never seen a partnership like this. So I'm going to quote here from their website. It is a cooperative management effort of the National Park Service and the California Department of Parks and Recreations. So they manage this together. It is a national park and three state parks managed and cared for together as a collective. So it includes Redwood National Park, Jedediah Smith Redwood State Park, Del Norte Coast Redwood State Park, and Prairie Creek Redwood State Park. So it's kind of four parks in one, and it does have a bit of a different feel than just a national park or just a state park. It really is sort of this unique organism.
Yeah, but at the same time, I felt like it was really, it was a very cooperative effort, and I never felt like we couldn't go into one of the visitor centers that was in the state park and not get information about the entire place. Everybody that we talked to was very knowledgeable about what was in different places and what programs were going in different places. Like, you wanted a little bit more of a distinction.
Okay. So I'm like a fanboy of the National Park Ranger. And I love how when you go to a national park and you get your map and you ask for some tips for where to hike, you're talking to a park ranger. And here, when you go into the visitor centers, chances are you're actually not talking to a national park ranger. You're talking to a docent or a volunteer. And they were awesome.
They were great. It was an idea you had to get past.
Yes, it was more of an idea.
Okay. They gave great recommendations. Yeah. We really did pinpoint the things that would be best for our time there. And we got in a variety of different kind of sites and hikes and experiences. So I don't want everybody to be overwhelmed by this. It's just helpful to have sort of a knowledge of when people are referencing the Jedediah State Park, don't think that you're going outside of the Redwoods. It's all part of the Redwoods.
Exactly.
And you just kind of have to embrace that fact and move on.
In fact, we didn't really spend much time in the actual national park part.
Technically. But we were in the area and saw all of the major sites of what people consider the Redwoods. That's the thing.
And just so you know, too, there are actually, kind of to complicate things further a little bit, there are other state parks right around there that are just not part of this collective organism. But these four parks, which are collectively run together, protect almost half of the remaining coast Redwoods. So thank God for them, frankly. And then the other half is privately owned, right? I mean, for instance, the KOA is 10 acres of Redwoods.
And they're monitored and they're controlled. Like, I asked the owner of the campground a little bit about what
Kevin.
He had to do, right? If he had to, say, remove limbs or whatever. And he, you know, answered and he said, yes, it is. Like, he has to have people that are licensed to specifically deal with these, you know, these types of trees. So there are definitely regulations around it. But then at the same time, he was also free to develop parts of his campground further that had Redwoods on it. So it's an interesting conservation topic to explore.
A balance between commerce and conservation. I mean, at one point, historically, there was no balance and the Redwood trees were just getting cut down like wild.
Right. And you're going to get a lot of that history if you go on one of the ranger-led talks, which we will talk about later. But that history of, chopped down.
Let's give you a tiny little bit of that history now. So after much controversy and compromise with the timber companies, Congress finally approved the federal park in 1968. So the Redwoods National Park is relatively new.
That is a new park,
in the grand scheme of parks. And it was President Lyndon B. Johnson who signed that into law and made it Redwood National Park. And that put 58,000 acres in the care of the National Park Service. Now, to be honest with you, if that didn't happen and if the state parks didn't happen, it's very possible you wouldn't have Redwood trees anymore.
You really wouldn't, and that's not an exaggeration, because when you're going on some of the hikes that we're going to talk about, we went on one that was a ranger-led, and he explained how you could literally see the timber lines. So because of the fact that they stopped it at a certain point, that really you can see where the that tree collection happened prior to that line where there was the cutoff, and the difference in the look of the the two forests, the old growth and the newer growth that's come up since that is amazing. It's a completely, and I don't know that I would have noticed it if we hadn't been on that Ranger-led
hike. And apparently the logging companies continued to cut down redwood trees like up to midnight of the night that this went into law. Because, I mean, frankly, they're incredibly valuable. I mean, the wood in a gigantic, massive redwood tree is worth a lot of money. So this is one of those conservation national park type things where it really is sort of commerce versus conservation to some degree. So in 1994, the national park and the three previously mentioned state parks joined together to better protect the resources in the parks. I think they just realized, like, it just makes more sense for us to work together than to work separately.
All right. And now only, and as you mentioned before, only 5% of the old growth forest remains. So this is an incredibly important area of protection because these are the largest trees in the world.
Absolutely. And so just think about it. Only 5% of the redwood trees remain and 2.5% are protected within this park system. And the other 2.5% are still privately owned, from what I understand.
Right. And some of them are probably protected because they have some different, like, you know, companies that have tourist trade, right, where people can go and see them. But as soon as we know that as soon as that's not valuable anymore, they could be harvested for the wood or the land. So this 2.5% that's protected is really important.
It's amazing. So what is a redwood tree? According to the NPS, it's all redwoods are cone-bearing trees, and they get their common name from their reddish-brown bark and heartwood. And there's three types of redwood trees. There's the dawn redwood, which they had thought was extinct and had been for a long, long time, but it was rediscovered in China in 1944. Now, I don't know if they're extinct again after that initial discovery. The second type of redwood is the giant sequoia. So those sequoias are redwoods in origin, and they're the most massive trees. They're not the tallest, but they are the most massive in terms of width. And the General Sherman tree in Sequoia National Park is considered to be the most massive living thing on earth. And the sequoias are found in the western slopes of the Sierra Nevada mountains in central California. So that's another national park trip I want to make.
And the sequoias are one of the national parks that people can go to. Like, that is a little, that's located closer to some of the other, you know, attractions in California that people visit. So honestly, a lot more people go to the sequoias, I think, probably to see the big trees, because it's like, okay, I'm here near these areas of California and I can go to the sequoias, whereas the redwoods are a little more out of the way.
Absolutely. Now, the third type of redwood tree is the coast redwood, and these are the tallest trees in the world. They're found from Northern California in the area where we were, where these parks are, and they go into the southernmost part of coastal Oregon, and then they stop and they go no further. So it is this very small slice of the West Coast that has these trees.
All right, let's get nerdy, because you were so nerdy on this trip with your book selections and what you were reading. Like, I was just trying to find a good novel, which I did a very poor job of this summer. Like, I was not happy.
I was having educational epiphanies day after day.
And you were like in these nonfiction books.
Frankly, I think I did a great job of pairing our destinations with books about the destinations.
I was just in the mood for fiction.
Do you hear that she's a little jealous?
No, okay, so I didn't want to read those.
A few book recommendations. So if you just want sort of a picture book, a coffee table type book that also has the basic information, I would recommend Redwood, The Story Behind the Scenery. It has good background info and a fair amount of text, but then it also has the gorgeous pictures to go along with it. And the nice thing about this book, it's like about $10. It's for a coffee table book. It's not like
$40, for your kids $50. Before you go to get them ready for what they're going to see and maybe give them a little background like we've talked about.
And I picked it up at the KOA, but you can get it on Amazon. It's available. Exactly. Good for the kids. Now, for the second time, I want to recommend one of the Falcon guides. So we use the Best Easy Day Hikes, Redwood National and State Parks. It's a Falcon guide by Dan Brett. Good maps, good descriptions of the hikes, good driving directions. We used it for Olympic as well. They fit in your pocket, so you can take them on the hike easily, pull them out and consult the maps. And the owner of the KOA, Kevin, saw me using this every day. And he's like, oh, what's that? I want to stock that in the store, because he kind of realized, like, oh, my goodness, this is a great little resource. And we have those Falcon guides for destinations all over the country.
I get annoyed with your amount of travel books.
Did you see how she had to think about what she was annoyed about? Because there's so
no,
many
I had to
things.
Think about what I was going to call the mound of travel books that you collect leading up to a trip. I don't think it's as necessary as you like. You know, the amount is not necessary. I have to say that this series we used over and over again on the trip, where a lot of those books you kind of use ahead of time, but then we don't actually you almost
use
it to set the stage
or the internet's an easy substitute for those other books, where this is really usable. It is
absolutely
being carried with you. The books are beat up and damaged and coffee stained by the time we get them home from the trip. Now, the main thing I want to recommend was a nonfiction book that is now truly one of my 10 nonfiction books I have ever read. And I teach a lot of nonfiction, so that is kind of saying a lot. It's a book called The Wild Trees by Richard Preston. All right. He is a New Yorker writer, or at least he was a New Yorker writer. I think he still is. It is an absolute page turner about a group of explorers led by Steve Sillett and Michael Taylor, who in the 80s and into the 90s believed that the tallest redwoods had not been discovered. In the 60s, National Geographic had claimed to have found the tallest redwood. And both of these men, separately, without even knowing each other, kind of thought that's not true. There are gigantic redwoods that people don't know about because they're in such thick and dense forest that no one's bothered to get to them. So separately, they both start exploring the redwood trees, and Steve Sillett climbs the trees, right? He actually climbs to the top of them. He's a scientist. Michael Taylor is hunting for them on the ground and not climbing them at all. Eventually, the two of them meet, and the story takes off. And when I say it's a page turner, it's partly because every time—
He means that relatively.
No. Because every time Sillett and his crew climb into these trees, it's breathtaking because you're wondering if they're going to die. You're literally wondering if they're going to fall and die because it is so dangerous. And there are some accidents along the way, certainly. So it is about the redwoods. It has some scientific information in it, but it really is more about this journey, this adventure to discover the world's tallest trees. And boy, oh boy, do they discover a lot of amazing tall trees that are taller than the ones that National Geographic had claimed was the tallest.
And I will put links in the show notes to those three books that we just talked about. And then also you wanted to recommend a YouTube video, right?
Yes. So after Sillett and Taylor sort of became somewhat famous, National Geographic finally teamed up and did a documentary about them. Now, I will confess I have not had a second to watch this yet, but it's free on YouTube. It's called Climbing Redwood Giants. I started watching the first 30 or 60 seconds. The quality wasn't amazing, but it is the quality of the YouTube video, right? I'm sure the original quality
was
of the
somebody
video
filming the TV.
Was national. But Stephanie will put a link to it. And I'm really excited to watch this. It's like a 40-minute documentary with Sillett, with Taylor. And there's a whole other cast of these kind of ragtag, interesting, almost kind of like these hippie beatnik botanist adventurers, you know. So it's a terrific book, and I would really recommend if you're going to the Redwoods to read this book, because then when you're there, you'll go, oh my God, this is where they found that tree. Like, we were in the Stout Grove, which is discussed in the book, you know. So it enriches the experience of going to the Redwoods. So those are my nerdy media recommendations.
All right. So those would be great before you got there, or sometimes we also like to bring books to read while we're there. That's always a favorite thing to do for both of us while we're traveling. So like I said, I didn't do that this time. I was in search of the perfect page-turning novel, which didn't happen either. Great disappointments this summer. But we are going to be...
Well, which is actually a cry and shame, because I recommended one of them now that I think of it.
Yeah. I don't know. So we are going to be back in a minute to talk about the hiking that we did in the Redwoods. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's time for our second segment in our Greetings from Redwood National and State Parks episode, and we're going to talk about our favorite hikes that we did in the Redwoods. But first, we have a sponsored segment by our friends at Outdoorsy.
Outdoorsy is the largest and most trusted RV rental marketplace, and they are making it easy to make a little scratch renting out your RV. You have a lot of options out there if you want to rent out your RV, but Outdoorsy is different, and they really want you to know what makes them different as a brand. They have a $1 million insurance policy that covers owners. There is no other RV rental marketplace out there that has that $1 million coverage for owners. They also have lots of owner support, even a private Facebook group where owners can kind of chat and discuss best practices and problem solve.
In like an unfiltered way.
Oh, like, yeah,
just
absolutely.
Just getting the most out of this. Yeah.
Exactly.
They also do an automatic DMV background check.
Yeah.
Right? So that can cancel out a lot of the crazies right off the bat.
Just skim them off the top. Don't even worry about those crazies because the background check's going to catch them, right? Like if you have that background check and you see, oh, this person has been in a few accidents, you can check them off the list and say, I'm not renting to you.
Yeah.
So you're putting the control back in your hands, right? So also they have, you know, they have like lots of resources for owners, like checklists for departure and return that you can very easily print out and then go over with any of your customers. And of course, reviews. You can search, and the owners and the renters can leave reviews for the experience.
So, what you're
that
saying
they
to me is they've created a community.
Yeah, and that's what they're all about. They are about the idea that the whole, like, RVing becomes a lot better for everyone when owners can rent out their RVs when they're not using it. And then people who don't own RVs can just use them when they want to. It makes everybody happier.
And they also have a lot of people who have listings in the San Francisco area. If you want to fly to San Francisco, get a cute little RV, go up to the Redwoods, done.
All right,
so visit outdoorsy.co. Jinx. So visit outdoorsy.co. Oh, that stinks because she can't talk for the rest of the podcast. Visit outdoorsy.co to list your RV or to get more info today. Let's talk hiking in the Redwoods to start off.
I'm
going to
enjoy you doing this alone because I can't talk until you
Stephanie doesn't do jokes.
Oh, you just said my name, so now I can talk. Okay.
So we did three major hikes in the Redwoods. And in this segment, we want to talk about actually hiking in the Redwoods. Then we'll come back and we'll talk about some of the things we did along the ocean, which also includes another hike. So the premium hike that we did first, and if you are staying at the Crescent City Redwoods KOA, you should also do first because it's really close, is the Hiachi Trail in Jedediah Smith Redwoods State Park. It's 4.2 miles out and back. So it was a bit of a longer hike for us with the kids, but it was a relatively easy and flat hike.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't a difficult hike at all. But what you do is you walk in and then you hike about 2 miles before – a little under 2 miles before you get to a crossing of the Smith River that comes in. And seasonally, they have a bridge actually that crosses over the Smith River, so you can actually enter the Stout Grove from the Jedediah Smith Redwood State Park Visitor Center. You don't have to do the 2 mile hike leading up to the point that we had to get to. But the bridge wasn't in place yet when we were here for the season, so we actually had to do the hike to get to the Stout Grove.
Yeah, I think we would have anyway.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. It was a lovely hike, but I think that actually we probably wouldn't have if we hadn't, if the bridge had been there and everybody said, oh, you go to the Visitor Center and you cross over. But, you know, you can do either way depending on how much you want to hike. So then we had to cross over the Mill Creek, which is kind of a little shoot off of the Smith River.
Which, honestly, that was a little dubious because when we set out and we had asked for advice both at the KOA and at the Visitor Center, they did not know how high Mill Creek was running. And apparently it can run high enough that you would need to get very wet to cross it. So when we got out there, we were sort of happy to discover the water was knee deep or lower. And there was also a tree down across that the boys were able to climb to cross
and
over.
And I did too. Yeah.
And Stephanie did too. And then I put Wesley on my shoulders and I got really wet.
But I had brought a change of clothes for everybody having had that like locals intel prior to that. Because I was like, okay, well, if we get wet, we'll have a change of clothes and we can do it. But you do want to cross over Mill Creek to get to the Stout Grove.
Because to hike it is out there and not cross the creek and go into Stout Grove is completely would be almost pointless. The main event is getting into Stout Grove.
So you're through the hike, you're passing through a lot of redwood groves, and there's always signs there that tell you, because they, most of them have been named. I guess they, you know, people can purchase the plaques and, you know, do it in honor of people and everything. So a lot of these smaller groves on the way out there have been named. It'll say so-and-so, you know, grove. But when the thing is, you don't get it if you haven't been there before. Then you cross over Mill Creek and you go into Stout Grove and you're like, oh, like it takes it up times 100. You're totally blown away.
These trees are thousands of years old. They are, many of them, over 2,000 years old. And it's a sense of awe that comes over you. And I'm not going to go there with this, but certainly for a lot of people, it's a spiritual experience.
Well, I think that the boys were shocked and awed by it. And, you know, Max kept referring to the fact that he felt like an ant, you know, next to these trees. And I think that that is very spiritual in a way. Like you're going, oh, you kind of see yourself in the grand scheme of things and you're very small. And I, you know what? I think that's a great thing for kids to experience. Like it was awesome for my kids to be sitting there thinking, there's a lot out there that's a lot bigger than me. Like, I'm not the center of the universe. I think it's a great experience. Now, in this grove, too, there's a lot of the trees that are fallen down. So that was amazing for these trees that go on and on for such a long time. And the boys had such a great time just, like, looking at these trees that were just
Climbing up on them.
Yeah.
And then walking, like, they're land bridges or something.
They're
and, like,
huge.
Walking across them for, you know, 100 yards.
It almost gives you a better, the ones that are fallen down give you a better perspective of how big they are, because you're standing like there and you realize the width and the breadth of them a little bit more than when they're just reaching high up into the sky.
Well, frankly, they say that you can't tell at all which are the tallest when you're on the ground looking up, because they sort of all disappear into one another. So that's a great point. You do get more of a sense of their grandeur with the fallen ones.
Yeah. And so there's a nice little loop in Stout Grove. It's very easy to follow. You just loop around and then you hike right back to where you started. We started at the Hiachi Trail head, okay, near the Smith River. Now, I want to say we had no idea that there was a beautiful place to swim right there in Jedediah Smith Redwood State Park, and we saw it on our hike. You just have to go and park right there in the state park, and you can have a lovely little swim in the Smith River. And we didn't know that. Had we? We did have a picnic lunch. We did have a lunch pack for the day, which was fantastic. So we went and we had our lunch there, and the kids swam in their regular clothes because I did have a change of clothes for them, but that they could change into afterwards. But I would highly recommend planning this so that you do the hike, then have lunch, and you're all set and outfitted for a swim afterwards.
Yeah, I swam in my pants.
Yeah. Because it was
the
gorgeous.
Water was crystal clear. Mm-hmm. The temperature was nice. Everyone was swimming. I'm like, I'm not going to not go swimming because I don't have shorts on.
Now, another tip is that there's a great ranger programs there at Jedediah State Park. So that if you're there, look at the schedule before you go. Because like some of the ranger programs are like at 4 p.m. So again, this is a whole day. We didn't make it into a whole day. But if we had known all the things in advance that we discovered why we were there, I would have done the hike, swimming and lunch, and then a ranger program, and then home for dinner.
Yeah. And another thing too, if you swim across the Smith River, there are some pretty user-friendly places for rock jumping that are not too high or aggressive. And both Theo and I swam across, climbed up on the rocks, and had a lot of fun jumping into very deep and safe water. Though I would warn you that there is poison ivy on the banks of the river.
In other words, don't listen to anything
well,
he's saying
after,
right now.
No, after the rock jumping, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to get poison ivy. And Theo's going to get poison ivy. But we didn't. So the next day, we decided to do the Lady Bird Johnson Grove Trail, which is in Redwood National Park. It's an easy 1.5-mile loop, and we caught a ranger-led program that runs there every week. And I think it actually runs there a couple times a week.
Yes, it does. And it's in the morning. I think it's at 10 a.m. But, I mean, obviously, you're going to check the schedule on any ranger-led programs when you go, because they change them with every season. But this, I think, is really wonderful if you want that more of that botanical background about the trees, and also the history of the trees in terms of the logging industry. So the boys were not, it was not necessarily kid-focused ranger program. It was a little bit over their heads, but I was interested. So they like wanted to plow through the hike and go, but the ranger was really giving a lot of information. And I was like, y'all need to trap it because I'm listening. Like, this was a moment where I was like, I'm an adult and I want to enjoy this part of the education here.
That's a great point that I hadn't really thought of until you said it, that this was one of the rare ranger-led programs where the kids were not engaged. It was somewhat intellectual. It also got into the history of the conservation movement, into Lady Bird Johnson and her role in conservation. So it was great for adults, not necessarily great for the kids.
This has this is a pretty accessible trail. So there's actually a ramp leading up to the bridge crossing that goes around. So this is a great trail to do if you need accessibility too.
Yeah, and a little bit of the history of the trail. In 1969, President Nixon and Johnson, along with Governor Reagan, who at the time, dedicated this 300-acre grove to Lady Bird Johnson in honor of her campaign to preserve America's beauty. And it is a gorgeous, mellow Redwoods hike.
Yeah, they have a really nice area about, I would say maybe about halfway through the loop. It's like this little carved out area with a seat and some plaques about the history of the grove and the dedication and everything. So it was, I just felt like it was I would almost do this first, to be honest. Like, I think this is a nice introduction to the park. Like, first morning, day one, do the ranger led hike in this one 1.5 mile loop and just kind of get a sense for the history and also a little more botanical information about the trees.
And to get very specific, it is a bit of a longer drive from the Crescent City Redwoods KOA, and the Highway 101 is sort of caved in at certain points and it's only one lane. I mean, by next summer, of course, all that's fixed, but there was some actual traffic getting down there. It was a little bit of a long drive, less than an hour, but it was a drive.
It affected our decisions about what we were going to do and when in the park dramatically, because there was a mudslide along the side of the cliff for a significant portion of the 101. So it's one lane traffic. So they stop one side and let the other go through. And then, they stop the other side and let you go through. So, I would say 50-minute drives turned into hour and a half drives easily, depending on how you hit that construction going down. That changed once we sat through that traffic a couple times. It changed our planning dramatically.
Yeah, like our last full day, we decided to stay up near Crescent City.
Yeah, I was like, we're not driving through that
again. I want to make another point. Both of these hikes we did one day after the other, and these are serious, famous Redwoods hikes. And for our family, we wanted to do something different the next day. And that's no knock on the Redwoods at all. Some people spend their lives hiking in the Redwoods, and it's their favorite place to hike. But we really had a strong desire to kind of go to the coast and do some coastal hiking. So if you
wait, because I want to say something else about that.
Go ahead.
I don't want to underplay that. So we were so juiced up about visiting the Redwoods because I think it is an iconic American destination, right? It's something you grow up seeing people drive their cars through the trees. You see people like in front of these massive trees. And I think, it's like you just put that in your mind as one of those things that's in America that you have to see. So me and you were very excited about this stop. But what happened was the first hike was amazing. And we were like, we were just breathless
and
speechless.
Yeah.
And then the next day we did more of that and we realized very clearly, and I think this is fair to share, if we kept doing those hikes, it was like we were saying to our kids, hey guys, we're going to go look at big trees again today. Like, let's go look at more big trees. It did have that feeling of same, same. So usually like in Olympic National Park, like we were hiking Hurricane Ridge, then we were going to Solduck Falls, then we were in the rainforest, then we were on the coast. It's like every day was like a new adventure. I felt like if we had continued to do a Redwoods hike, quote unquote, every day, our boys were like, look, big trees.
And they would have been having fun and everything. And the other point to make, since we're just kind of being honest about this, which we always are.
This time we're being honest.
Well, no, this was a five-night stop. And at the end, we both agreed it could have been a four-night stop.
Absolutely.
And the last day was fine. We chilled out. We enjoyed Crescent City. But just in terms of how much time you decide to spend in a place, for our family, four nights would have been ample to really experience the Redwoods and to really experience the coast and to really experience Crescent
and
City.
And don't email us because we know that we didn't see everything. We know there's more. It's not like, we saw everything and we were done in 4 days.
It's more about traveling with kids and the rhythm of traveling with kids.
Yes.
And the variety that we want. want. And when we got home, frankly, I really was like, oh yeah, I want to go back and do this, this, and this.
Yeah.
But I just didn't want to, do all that at once.
Yeah, exactly. It is something that felt like, okay, you know, time to move on. So we did feel that all the other stops, we felt like they were timed, right? Like Olympic 5 days. We felt like we had a great time. We saw a lot. This stop, we could have done a day less and been perfectly happy to move on. So that's just in terms of,
I think that's
planning.
Important for people to hear, because a lot of people are going to hit the Redwoods as part of a larger road trip going from here to here or mm-hmm. there to there. Very few people are flying in and then just like going to the Redwoods.
And you could even if it is a stop through, I would even say you could do 2 full days, 1 day doing a beautiful Redwoods hike, 1 day doing a nice coastal, you know, part that we're going to talk about. And then you could move on. And honestly, I think that would you have seen everything? No, but you would have gotten that like fix, that Redwoods fix. All right. So we are going to talk more about that coastal area that we keep mentioning in the next segment. So stay tuned.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. It is time for segment 3 in our episode, Greetings from Redwood National and State Parks. And we're going to take you up to the ocean because Redwoods National and State Parks runs along the Pacific Ocean, and it's gorgeous. So before we dive into the things that we did along the coast, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Cabela's.
Cabela's has everything your family needs to get into the great outdoors and camp in comfort. Now, before we left for our Pacific Northwest trip, we talked about some of the gear that we were prepared to bring with us just to make this trip the best trip ever. And we've been given some feedback to some of that gear that really performed well for us. And Jeremy wants to chime in this week with his favorite shirts, apparently, ever in the entire world.
Can I tell a little story first?
Okay.
So on one of the days where we went this spring to Cabela's to get gear for the summer, the manager at the store, Ron, is just like, I love him. I want him to be like my dad, my uncle,
your
brother.
Your uncle Ron.
He recommended these fishing shirts for hiking to me, and he said that he wears them all summer, no matter what he's doing outdoors. And he said it makes...
He was like, this is the only shirt you're ever going to need.
It was like a religious thing with him. Like a spirit.
Yeah.
He's like, you don't sweat in these shirts. And I was like, you don't know what you're talking about, Ron. Like, I sweat. It doesn't matter what shirt you give me. So anyway, I picked one out and I bought it.
You were skeptical.
I was more than skeptical. I almost didn't bring it with me.
Right. Okay? You were like, Ron told me I need this shirt.
So it's the Cabela's Men's Guide Light Long Sleeve Woven Shirt. And, you know, the way they describe it is light and breathable. UPF 50. It was light and breathable. I wore it on every hike.
And you didn't stop talking about it. On the hike, you're like, I can't believe this shirt.
Well, if I wear a cotton shirt hiking, it's soaked at the end of the hike. I sweat. I know. I'm sorry.
I'm getting grossed
out,
and I'm sure all our listeners
at the
are.
End of our hikes, 3 miles, 4 miles, 5 miles. No, not all of our listeners are grossed out. Maybe the ladies are, but the guys are like ready to
yeah,
order
me
this.
Too.
By the end of the hike in this shirt, my shirt was dry. And I was not sweaty. I mean, it literally is like the air circulates through the shirt in such a way that it keeps you dry while hiking. I will never wear a cotton t-shirt hiking again.
All right. I will put a link to this magical shirt.
There's a few varieties of it.
Right.
Okay. But it's in their fishing line. That's the thing, is you might not think of this as a hiking shirt. But
unless
Ron,
you have Ron.
Well, you know, Ron was like, that you want to use this for anything you're doing outside.
All right. You can check out Cabela's full line of affordable gear at Cabela's.com. It is in your nature.
Okay, so on the third day, we decided it was time to head up to the coast and do some of the things along the beach, kind of get our feet wet and see the ocean. So we decided to drive to Fern Canyon, and that is one of the absolute highlights of a trip to Redwoods State and National Parks. You have to do Fern Canyon. That has to be part of your itinerary. And it is a 7 or 8 mile drive in off the highway on a dirt-packed road. And it was actually kind of a fun road, but the truck got filthy, filthy, filthy. And eventually you come up to the beach and there's a campground there. like there's a campground there. You're not allowed to have travel trailers there. And all motorhomes and truck campers have to be 24 feet or under. And then there's that campground. And then right next to it is Fern Canyon, which is one of the most beautiful things I've ever experienced in any national park. Stephanie, can you paint a picture of Fern Canyon?
Well, the easiest thing to do is what everybody says. Well, Jurassic Park scenes from Jurassic Park were filmed there, right? Because that helps people, you know, just imagine what it looks like. So you are actually walking through a canyon, right? So you have the walls on either side of you and the water down the middle, which is obviously going to be at different levels depending on the time of year and the runoff, et cetera, et cetera.
So gorgeous fern walls on
right.
either side.
Moss and ferns.
And then rocky ground and streams meandering through the canyon, sometimes running quick, sometimes running
right,
slow.
Right, because obviously it's running into the ocean and it's, you know, the runoff. So it just depends on the time of year. Now, what I would suggest you do is make sure that your kids have clothing and footwear that can get wet, because there are boards laid down for walking on across parts that are deeper. But of course, your children will not want to walk on those boards. They will want to walk in the water. So because of the temperature was pretty cool while we were there. We just had regular socks and hiking shoes on. And the boys, of course, wanted to get their feet wet and wanted to be in the water. So that,
We got really wet.
Yeah, they did.
And the Keens were perfect. And, mm-hmm. and you brought that up on a social media post. They were perfect because they can get wet, but you can actually hike and climb still. And there was a tree down at a certain point. And,
yeah.
And rangers had told us, well, you might not want to go past that. People are breaking their ankles. Well, this summer, like people have been breaking their ankles. Well, of course, we wanted to climb the tree and go past that. And a lot of people were.
We were looking and we were like, really? People
and
break their ankles?
If they had just had flip-flops on or something like that, they wouldn't have been able to do it.
But I don't feel like it's good for barefoot either.
No,
like
no.
Because they are climbing over trees. You don't want them to be barefoot. So just think about footwear when you're going on this and having kids be happy splashing in the water. Because what I wanted them to do was to stay dry because they had hiking boots and socks. So I was like, guys, don't get your boots wet. You're going to be miserable because it's chilly. So I said, just wait till the end of the hike and then we'll take off our hiking shoes and you can just play in the water. Well, of course, you know, that didn't work and they were wet, but they were fine. They didn't complain about it.
And somebody on a social media post said, oh, the problem with the Keens is they take forever to dry. And well, that might be true, but if they're the perfect footwear to wear to have the adventure you want to have, I would wear something like Keens and Fern
for the kids. Like I was happy in my, I've talked about the Gore-Tex, Cabela's women's hikers that I am in love with. And they were perfect for this hike because I did get wet and they would dry right away. My feet were bone dry at the end of this hike and I was in the water a lot.
And the water is beautiful and the little wooden bridges are beautiful. And it's a really fun place to kind of slow down, meander through it, get wet, splash and play. For me, it's not like this rigorous hike. I'm going to hike through Fern Canyon. Some people were blessed.
No, you're wandering. There's tons of people taking pics and everything. It might be one of those hikes where you try to get there a little earlier if you do want more sort of privacy or you want less crowds.
Well, it was the most crowded thing we did in
Redwoods. Because it is like the most popular thing.
That's not a complaint because we were there too. We were part of the crowd. And I enjoy the fact that people are getting out and enjoying their national parks. I never let a crowd ruin the experience for me. But just so you know, like, the Stout Grove, we saw like two other families out there. And there were definitely long stretches of time where we were alone in the Stout Grove, which was wonderful and added to the mystery of it. That's not going to happen in Fern Canyon unless, like Stephanie said, maybe if you get there really early.
Yeah. Now, another coastal trail that we did was the York Trail to Hidden Beach. So that's really beautiful trail that sort of hugs the coastline, the craggy coastline, and goes out to a beach that we spent quite a bit of time on.
Yeah. And the hike itself is gorgeous because you get these magnificent views. But then sporadically, there are cypress tunnels. There are these sections where the trees have sort of become intertwined together. And it is literally like the hiking trail is going through a dark tunnel, which has been created by trees. And it made for some really cool photo opportunities with you guys walking through the tunnels. And they were kind of cool and dark and mysterious. Then you emerge and you have a view of the ocean again. Then you do another cypress tunnel. On a map, the hike looks like a lollipop. So the loop is up top and then a finger goes down and it takes you to Hidden Beach. hidden beach, you want to probably time with low tide as much as you can. Because,
although it was big enough that if you were there with high tide, you would have been fine. There's tons of driftwood for the kids to play with.
When we were there, there were tide pools as well.
But the boys really played more with the driftwood than they did in the tide pools here, because there was those big, large pieces that they were like building teepees and everything like that there. And we also had a good amount of snacks with us in our backpacks for this hike, which was great, because then when we got to the beach and the boys wanted to stay and hang out, we were fine because we had some snacks in the backpacks.
We were there for an hour and a half.
We were there for a while. Yeah. And it was nice because we weren't like, oh, everybody's hungry, we have to go right back because the picnic lunch is in the car.
And I think we need to mention that this is as close as we came to a major injury on our whole trip. And Stephanie's looking at me not remembering.
When it toppled.
Theo built a very elaborate fort out of driftwood. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very elaborate. And as we were leaving, he accidentally knocked it all over. It wasn't like a destructive boy moment, but he accidentally like hit one the wrong way and the whole thing. So all around him, gigantic pieces of driftwood, some of them larger than him, are falling all around him. And somehow miraculously, one of them did not hit him in the head and sent him to the hospital.
Yeah. Now, another funny story from this hike was that prior to taking this hike, we had been in the visitor center in Crescent City, and the lovely lady there who gave great information, despite the fact that she wasn't a ranger, as Jeremy would have preferred, told our boys that banana slugs are like an anesthetic, that people used to use them to numb certain parts of the body. Now, we had seen quite a few banana slugs already, right? That's the big animal in this area. And
when we say big, like longer than your hand.
Well, it's the biggest slug in the world, I think.
They were big.
Yeah. So we had actually had quite a few spottings already, but so she told them this. And so Theo had hurt his toenail, his little pinky toenail,
which is off. He lost it,
just in case you wanted the update. But so we're hiking and he's like, oh, my toe. And the boys decided that they had to find a banana slug and put it on his toe to make it numb. I am not kidding you. Well, guess what? We found the banana slug.
And he was a messy, gross guy.
He was so gross. And sure enough, the boys did the whole thing. And it was like this big...
Max also kissed it.
Because that's what she said.
He wanted to see if it would numb his lips.
She said, if you kiss a slug... She gave them that idea. She said, if you kiss a banana slug, it'll make your lips numb. So they just got obsessed with this. And sure enough, on this hike, we found actually a couple of banana slugs. And there was a lot of like grossing like out and putting the banana slugs on toes and kissing them and being like, I can't feel my lips. I can't feel my toe. My toe's numb. So anyway, banana slugs got Theo through this hike, even though he had a sore pinky toe. So just FYI, you can find numbing banana slugs.
There's a larger point here.
Is there?
When your kids have something they're looking for on a hike, some natural element, it really makes the hike exciting for them. And so if your kids struggle with hiking, if you can find some kind of animal or bird or slug or whatever it is that they can be searching for in something of a scavenger hunt fashion, it can really propel the kids forward in a hike.
All right. So moving on, the last day, like we mentioned, we did not want to go anywhere in the park again because we were like, oh, we don't want to sit in traffic or drive a long time to get anywhere. So not that there weren't other places that we would have liked to see in the park, but we decided to really spend a day, a kind of a down day in Crescent City, which has a lot to do there.
I thought it was a very cool town.
We had a great day.
It was, the KOA was only like 5 minutes outside of downtown,
yep.
Right? I'm not remembering
mm-hmm.
that.
Oh, absolutely. I actually went to, just FYI for people, because real life here. When we arrived, I had to do grocery shopping and I drove less than 5 minutes to a Walmart.
Yeah,
so easy.
Crescent City was a very cool town.
Yeah.
Good shopping, good food. And it's a good surfing town, apparently. I mean, this is all the way Northern California, but there's like a Point Break there. And I didn't bring any of our surfing gear as a family because I wasn't going to be lugging it all over the Pacific Northwest. This was the first time I saw somebody surfing getting great waves, and so rare in California. I saw one guy out at this Point Break surfing gorgeous waves. So it's so far north that it's not crowded for surfing. So it's something you might consider renting some boards or doing that there at the beach. So we did chill out at the beach and play wiffle ball and enjoy the beach. But we also went to a place called Battery Point Lighthouse, which was really fun and worth a visit.
Yeah, you know, the lighthouse was nice. You only can cross over during low tide, so it's only actually open during low tide. During higher tide, the area in between the lighthouse and Crescent City, it kind of fills in. So we actually checked the tides for that day and made sure to visit during low tide. It is an operating lighthouse with people that actually live there in the house, but they do tours. So the funny thing is you sit outside and wait for the next tour to go, but only, I think it was 9 people can go on each tour. So there's like people waiting. And then the tour seemed to be quite long. Like I would say that people were in there for like 20 minutes. So while I was sitting there, I realized we weren't going to get in on the next tour. We were going to get in on the tour after that. And I was like, okay, so that means I'm sitting here for probably another 40 minutes to get in on the tour. So we just decided to scrap that and to do tide pooling.
But while that process was going on, we were rock climbing.
Yeah, I was sitting waiting. You guys were rock climbing.
There's awesome rock climbing all up there. And I will say this, it is actually dangerous. And as the boys were scrambling around and climbing, I was having some of those moments as a father where I was having to shut down certain areas. Like, no, you're not going over there. Like, there are places where it just does drop off. So for teenagers and adults, it's fine, and I wouldn't call it dangerous. But if you have smaller kids, you're going to want to keep them close and just know what their abilities are. But the boys had a lot of fun scrambling around on those rocks. But they needed me with them to say, don't go over there. That's going to drop off. And then as Stephanie mentioned, we did the tide pooling, and this was really awesome tide pooling.
Yeah, it had great crabs everywhere, sea stars, sea anemones, a lot of snails, which we hadn't seen a lot of up until this point. So they were really cute because we could kind of like see them uncurled and everything and kind of crawling around. And I was showing them that hermit crabs, things like that. So they were fun tide pools. We had a great time there.
You guys saw seals? Or sea lions?
So
I didn't.
Seals,
I was somewhere
the
else.
Harbor seals.
Yeah, you guys spotted them.
Oh, the sea otters, you're thinking. That was really funny. So we were tide pooling, and like I said, there's this area that fills in during high tide, but during low tide, you can tide pool there between the lighthouse and the parking lot for the lighthouse. Well, we were about to finish. We were like finishing up. The water started to come in, and I was like, come on, guys, let's like go over to the beach. And we're like walking up, and I see this movement out of the corner of my eye, and I look over, and a mama sea otter, along with her 2 baby sea otters, are like zipping across the tidal pool area out towards the ocean. And I was like, oh my gosh, guys, look. And we were able to watch these sea otters zip across, run all the way across, like 10 feet, 15 feet away from us. It was so
The boys
cool.
called for me, and by the time I got there, they were gone.
Yeah, we watched them swim away. So that was actually quite a fun moment for us to catch that.
We had a great lunch afterwards at the chart room, which was recommended by Kevin at the Redwoods KOA. There are water views from inside. We saw sea lions.
Harbor seals. Those are the harbor
seals.
Yeah.
Right from out in the harbor, from our seats.
They're super funny. They just lie around on those docks, like just beached whale.
To be the place for lunch in Crescent City. It's family-owned, family-friendly. We had great seafood and great BLTs.
Yeah, and the service was real. They were very friendly and everything, and it was quick service. It didn't feel like – it kind of felt like the place that could be a tourist trap, but it didn't feel like a tourist trap. It felt like a meal to have as a family, so that was good. Now, there's also a really big park right down in Crescent City, and we didn't end up going there because our kids were tired by the time that we were done with all this stuff, and they just wanted to head back
and
to the campground.
Playground.
But yeah, it's a huge playground, and also there's a public pool there. So, you know, if you want to research that little area, you can definitely spend some time there, especially if you have younger kids that really hanker for that playground experience. This is a huge playground. Our boys are kind of getting past that stage now. Wesley would still play at a playground, but Max and Theo are kind of like, whatever, let's go back to the campground.
If you had smaller kids and you needed a place to sort of detox or relax after a hike, this would be a really great place to do it. And also Park Headquarters is right by that playground. So they have the really nice gift shop there. That's where I bought the copy of The Wild Trees, I think. And then there's all the volunteers there with maps that were ready to kind of help you have your Redwoods adventure. So while we are saying we could have done 4 days instead of 5, I did really enjoy that relaxing day in Crescent City.
Absolutely. And I think that you will have a great time no matter how many days you spend here. But it's always helpful to know in terms of planning, like, you know, how many full days, if you're really good about packing everything into a day, like how many days can we do this in? And I think that 3 is the perfect number for the Redwoods.
3 full days, 4 nights.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So we are going to be back in a minute and we're going to tell you what news is happening in the world of RVFTA. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's time for our RVFTA News Roundup, in which we speak about ourselves, and it is sponsored by our friends at the Thetford Corporation.
Thetford is the industry expert and innovation leader, and they have been making RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. Thetford's Norcold refrigerators are uniquely designed for the RVing experience and built to handle the demands of the road. They can automatically switch to propane if electricity isn't available, and they can be serviced at RV dealerships nationwide. Norcold refrigerators represent 50 years of design and manufacture of road RV use. To see a complete lineup of products, visit Thetford.com. And I am so excited that our second big trip of the summer, I will have my refrigerator.
Well, that was the RV kitchen was the thing we both missed the most on this long road trip without the RV.
Yep.
I would not have anticipated that, but it absolutely was. So we just have to save the dates for you. The Hershey RV show is September 13th to 17th, and we will be definitely doing some meet and greets there. You need to stay tuned for where we're going to be doing that. Friday and Saturday seem like a definite, and we are figuring out the Thursday-Sunday situation.
Now, another save the date. This is a bit in the future, but obviously you got to plan for these things, so we want to give you as much advance warning as possible. The Florida RV Super Show in Tampa, we are thrilled that we are going to be going back there this year. It is from January 17th through the 21st. So we've been there the last 2 years. We've had a fantastic time. We love going to Tampa in January. So if you can manage to squeeze it in, we will definitely be there, and we'd love to see you there too.
And we will see you at the RV show and hopefully at the campground.
See you at the RV shows. Bye-bye.